Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to Rivalries on the WWE Podcast as we are well into March 2021. And it is not crazy that not only are we already done the winter, we are approaching WrestleMania season. There's a light at the end of the tunnel with all of this COVID nonsense, at least for my friends down there in the United States, as I'm up here in Canada and we are way behind the eight ball in that regard. But at least it seems like everything all in all is starting to look a lot more positive. And in better news, The Miz is no longer WWE champion, which is arguably the most positive news one could have right now. And I'm not going to go too much into the current product today, but I'm very happy that Bobby Lashley is the WWE champion. I remember being on with Matt last year around May or June, and we were talking about when he was feuding with Drew McIntyre back then. I want to say it was the Backlash pay-per-view, the greatest wrestling match of all time, that Bobby Lashley had a chance against Drew McIntyre. And we were discussing then that we would have been open for him running, getting a run with that championship. But look, it all worked out for the best because they built Bobby Lashley into one of the best wrestlers of the last calendar year, I would say. Ever since MVP has been with him. Ever since MVP has been put with Bobby Lashley, that whole tandem, that faction, along with Shelton Benjamin and later on Cedric Alexander, has been, in my opinion, probably the best thing other than Roman Reigns on WWE programming over the last calendar year. And I don't know when the last time they've built a better superstar than Bobby Lashley. Him having that lengthy reign with the United States Championship, looking like a pure beast in doing so. Protected losses when he lost to the Triple Threat match as Matt Riddle got the pinfall of John Morrison. Just absolutely stoked for what they did with Bobby Lashley and the Hurt Business as a whole. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, I was the biggest critique of them bringing back MVP. I didn't understand why they did in the Royal Rumble. I didn't get it. But he has been the straw that has stirred the drink for the Hurt Business and for Bobby Lashley. And I know Bobby Lashley is the star, but I maintain without MVP, there is no Bobby Lashley WWE champion. I believe that because they have tried numerous different approaches with Bobby Lashley. I'm sure you guys remember about 2-3 years ago, they had Leo Rush beside him trying to be his mouthpiece. That never got him higher than an Intercontinental Championship. MVP has been exactly what his name is, the MVP for Monday Night Raw, for the Hurt Business, for Bobby Lashley, for, and you could argue, the WWE as a whole. He has been a Paul Heyman level, in my opinion, on the microphone, and it has just been absolutely straight A's across the board for what WWE Creative has done with the Hurt Business, Bobby Lashley, MVP, so on and so forth. But talking about good creative and some conflicts in creative, we're going to get to that right now with our rivalries this week. And this week we will be covering Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels in the summer of 2005. And you may be wondering, well, what do you mean about critiques in creative and problems in creative? Well, if you guys don't know, behind the scenes during this program, there was a lot of problems and there were bumpy roads and there was a lack of agreement between the two of these guys, Shawn Michaels and Hulk Hogan, that is. So let me just kind of set the landscape for you as to where we were in 2005. 2005, I feel, was kind of like the tail end of the Ruthless Aggression era, because following WrestleMania 21 in April of 2005, you had Batista win the World Heavyweight Championship and you had John Cena win the WWE Championship. And these two guys really ushered in a new era. They were still part of the Ruthless Aggression era. But when I think Ruthless Aggression, I think more like Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Triple H, Brock Lesnar. those guys holding the world championships. Even Goldberg, because he was a big part of programming in 2003. So by the time 2005 came around, more so the summer of 2005, they were really starting to exit out of the Ruthless Aggression era. They probably still had a solid 2 years left, but you could feel that the type of programming had started to change. And by this time, you know, Brock Lesnar was long gone. Triple H was on hiatus during the summer of 2005 following his Hell in a Cell match with Batista. You had Batista go over to SmackDown, John Cena come over to Raw. Chris Jericho was on his last legs of his inaugural run with the WWE. He left following SummerSlam 2005, I believe, when he lost to John Cena. So there were winds of change as to who was leading this company. And it, front and center were John Cena and Batista, and to a lesser extent, Randy Orton, which is weird to say to a lesser extent, as he's the only still full-time competitor out of those three. And you can make the argument is the best of those three. I think he's unarguably had a better career than Batista has. And you can make the case that he has had a better career than John Cena, depending what your flavor is. But what I will say is that while there were winds of change, WWE still had the same constants that we had seen for the better part of the Ruthless Aggression era, Shawn Michaels being one of them. And another guy who was a big part of the early on part of the Ruthless Aggression era was Hulk Hogan. And he was probably, give or take, a full-time wrestler right up until WrestleMania 19. And WrestleMania 19, when he had the Clash, the No Holds Barred match with Mr. McMahon, and I would say that it exceeded expectations for what it was. What, two guys in their 60s. Hogan was never a great technical wrestler, to put it lightly. We all know what Vince McMahon was, but that was kind of the last time we had seen Hogan in an everyday program. And by that point, you know, we had had our fix of Hulk Hogan, even upon his return to the company in 2002, early 2002. You know, he came back, he had the initial heel run with the NWO, had the match with The Rock at WrestleMania 18, turned babyface after The Rock, losing to The Rock, had a championship run, lost it to The Undertaker, then had the Mr. America gimmick, had another match with The Rock, which I've already covered on here, and then it culminated at WrestleMania 19. He even won the tag team championships with Edge, I believe. So we got our fix of Hulk Hogan as a full-time competitor, and then in 2005 he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. So at the WrestleMania Hall of Fame, or the WWE Hall of Fame before the night of WrestleMania, he gets inducted, and then on the night of WrestleMania he comes out to make the save on Eugene, which was kind of a good moment, you know, the nostalgic moment. I remember I popped, I was, what, 10 years old, and I really liked it. He beat the hell of Muhammad Hassan and Daivari, threw them out of the ring, pandered to the crowd, did the whole Hogan shtick, and then he went on his merry way. And I really thought that this was going to be the end of Hulk Hogan. And you gotta, like, he wasn't in horrible shape at the time. Like, if he's in his mid-70s now, he was probably in his early 60s at this point. So, or late 50s, I don't have his age on hand. Maybe someone will correct me. But he still wasn't fully out of in-ring capabilities. Like, you know, Ric Flair was wrestling at this point. Like, for God's sakes, Ric Flair was an in-ring competitor until 2008. So, I mean, Hulk Hogan could still go. But then he came back in the summer of 2005. And in the summer of 2005, he started having a relationship with HBK, Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels was arguably the biggest babyface at this time. Because, you know, John Cena was booked as that, but, I mean, I don't think people had fully turned on John Cena yet, because he was still, what, only 4 months into his first ever WWE Championship reign. He had just come out with his rap album, which me and my friends listen to every day en route to our baseball games in the summer of 2005. He still kind of had the gangster gimmick. He hadn't fully moved away from that. So I think that people were still behind John Cena, but at the same time, you had this nostalgic guy in HBK who was just the constant, and he had been a full-blown babyface since his return to the company on a full-time basis in 2002. And as we knew, before that, in 1998, prior, he was the best heel in the company. He had always been a great heel ever since the Rockers broke up. He was the yin to Bret Hart's yang during their programs in the mid-90s. So, but since he came back in the Ruthless Aggression era, he had always been a babyface. So him aligning himself with Hulk Hogan, what made a lot of sense. Two nostalgic guys, two overwhelming babyfaces in the history of the company, right up there with the likes of The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, top five for sure on the babyface side of things. So it made a ton of sense, and the crowd was eating it up. But this all came to a head on a Monday Night Raw in July when things boiled over for the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. So, after the big win against Carlito and Kurt Angle in the main event of a Monday Night Raw in July of 2005, while pandering to the crowd and HBK is going along with the whole Hulk Hogan gimmick and shtick and doing the thing, he super kicks Hogan's head off. And look, in retrospect, you're probably saying, oh, classic Shawn Michaels, where you think he's an overwhelming babyface and then he turns on his tag team partner. Because over the years, this kind of became a recurring theme with HBK. Like, I covered him versus John Cena. And him versus John Cena was the same concept, and then he did it while they were tag team champions. He did it with Triple H in a triple threat match along with John Cena. So, you guys listening to it now, you're probably not overly surprised. But like I said, you have to put yourself in the moment. Where were we at that point in time in the wrestling world? And that point in time in the wrestling world, HBK had been the most overwhelming babyface, arguably, in the company over the last three calendar years since his return. And for him to do this was quite shocking. And again, these are all just rumors, but they've been relayed by some pretty reliable people. Apparently, this is where the creative conflict between these two performers started. Allegedly, HBK wanted to do a babyface versus babyface type of story where the story would have gone HBK confronting Hulk Hogan man to man and saying, I need to know, we need to clash, I gotta know if I could beat you. Which, I mean, we had seen before. Like, we had seen that type of match in the past, babyface versus babyface, most notably Austin versus Rock at WrestleMania 17, although Austin turned heel following that match, or to end that match, rather. And, I mean, in a lot of ways, you could make the case that Hogan versus Rock was babyface versus babyface, even though Hogan was booked as a heel, but he was just so adored across the wrestling world. He was just a babyface, and The Rock was booked as a babyface. So, anyway, I could see why HBK wanted to do this, but at the same time, he's such a good heel. That's the thing about Shawn Michaels, and even though he's a born-again Christian now, and he couldn't do the same crazy antics that he did when he was struggling with substance abuse back in the 90s, he still knows heel psychology, and the visual of him kicking Hogan's head off and then just standing over him, staring at him, almost like it was, he was like bothered that he had to do it, I thought was great. But for whatever reason, it was Hogan versus a heel Shawn Michaels, as opposed to a babyface versus babyface. And they build this match as icon versus icon. And the other thing is that these two guys were faces of the company at different times. And in a lot of ways, HBK was Hogan's, successor as the top babyface in the company. Because if you go back, Hogan kind of was no longer the top babyface in the company by the early 90s, I would say. And originally, Lex Luger was supposed to be his successor. And then that obviously didn't work out. Luger went to WCW. And then it kind of became Bret Hart by default, but I don't think Bret Hart ever caught fire like Shawn Michaels did, and I think that much was evident when that 60-minute Iron Man match concluded, where both of them were babyfaces. And obviously Shawn Michaels in the main event became much more notable as a heel, but I think in a lot of ways it went Hogan, HBK, Austin. And I don't think HBK ever reached the levels of Hogan and Austin, which were his predecessors and successors as those top guys in the company. But I would say that in, let's say, the mid-90s, it was Hogan, it was HBK and Hart, but I'll give the edge to HBK just because he was so damn good. And I just think he was a more intriguing character than Bret Hart. I just think, and especially when the Attitude Era got ushered in, HBK was that guy that kind of spearheaded that. And the crazy thing is that these two were going head-to-head on opposite shows in a lot of ways. Hogan was over on Nitro as the top heel in the company leading the NWO. And HBK was the top heel in the company leading DX on Monday Night Raw. So, I mean, it made a lot of sense in so many different ways for these two to be pitted against one another. Now, whether or not you think it should have been face versus face like HBK wanted, or face versus heel like Hogan wanted, that's just up to you. I think that from a kid perspective at the time, I liked this, that Hogan was the face, HBK was the babyface, or heel rather. Sorry, I'm getting all mixed up with my words today. And off to the races we go. I remember being that way. But now looking back on it in hindsight as an adult, you probably wanted a more realistic storyline. And if we're looking at it in a realistic perspective, why would Shawn Michaels turn heel on the turn of a dime out of nowhere? That's kind of the way I look at it. Like, it just made no sense. And following this program, Shawn Michaels went back to being a babyface. So he literally turned heel for like a month and a half, give or take. And as I've gotten older and I've matured, obviously, with my age, like it happens with everyone, I look for realistic storytelling in wrestling. That's what I look for when I watch the WWE. And from a realistic standpoint, it really just made no sense that HBK would turn heel like this. But again, that's up to you. It's your personal preference. So that's where the creative conflicts between the two behind the scenes started. And it kind of started parlaying into the on-screen a bit, and we'll get to that. And it really came to a head with what happened at the SummerSlam match, which main event of the show. But the best part about this program, I think, was a segment on Monday Night Raw in Montreal, which I was at. I was at this Monday Night Raw, and I remember it like yesterday. And it didn't even involve Hulk Hogan. It was Shawn Michaels. And it was one of his first segments in Montreal since the Screwjob. He had come out once at No Way Out 2003, but he wasn't even involved in the match. He just ran out and interfered in a match. But this was the first time he had ever spoken in Montreal, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm fairly certain, since the Montreal Screwjob in 97. And the rumor was is that WWE never wanted to bring him out for a match or a promo because he was always a babyface, but they knew he would get booed out of the building if they ever did brought him out, whether he was babyface or heel in Montreal. And to be honest, Montreal is a typical crowd that just cheers for heels. Like, I don't know if you guys remember La Resistance, the guys who were billed from Quebec, the most over heel tag teams probably in the company in 2003, 2004. Yeah, well, they got a homecoming when they came to Montreal just because they're French. And they came out and they said, "Bonjour, nous sommes La Resistance." And then everyone popped and they went nuts. So just to say, this, it was a heel crowd. But I don't think there was any way they were going to cheer the heel in this instance because it was HBK Shawn Michaels. And when he came out to open the show on Monday Night Raw in August in the build to SummerSlam, it was a perfect storm and a best case scenario for Shawn Michaels to build himself as a heel in a short amount of time. So I'll stop it right there for a second. Have you ever heard Shawn Michaels get booed like that since he came back in 2002? It was nuts. And like I said, they had a short amount of time to build him as a top heel. And my God, this was the perfect way to do it. He knew what to do. He came out in a suit, that shit grin smirk on his face. And then he opens up with "Who's your daddy, Montreal?" Like, it was just the perfect storm for them to completely build him as a top heel in the company, and they knew he was gonna get booed out of the building in Montreal. Like, that was just, it was well documented that Montreal hated Shawn Michaels. And like I said, I'm like 95% sure that this was his first promo in Montreal in, what was it at this point, 8 years? So it was a long time coming for Montreal to get their true feelings out on Shawn Michaels for what had happened in 97. So I was in the building and the chorus of boos were insane. So let's just get into what Shawn Michaels had to say to the Montreal faithful. So he's really digging in here against Montreal and Canada as a whole. But like the thing is that unless you're from Canada, or more specifically from Quebec, which I am, I'm born and raised here, like Montreal, Quebecois, they're a different animal than the rest of Canada. They're very proud people. And I don't completely identify because I'm an Anglophone in Montreal, but I do speak French. Bonjour, je m'appelle Anthony, just to give you a taste of it. But they're a very overwhelming crowd. And it's, while you're making fun of Canada, you're antagonizing almost the most polarizing group in Canada as a whole, in Montreal, in Quebec. So obviously he starts trashing Hogan, and Hogan was just a rock star in Montreal. And if you remember a year and a half prior, when they had No Way Out in Montreal, when they had Rock vs. Hogan 2, Montreal went crazy for Hulk Hogan. They were all over Hulk Hogan. Or even before that, 3.5 years before this promo, the night following WrestleMania 18, Monday Night Raw in Montreal, after Hogan lost to The Rock, they received him like a hero. So he knew that not only did they despise him in HBK, but they loved Hogan in Montreal. Or we did, I could say that. We loved Hogan in Montreal. Can't say the same thing now, but in 2005, we were all about Hulk Hogan. And we were just chomping at the bit to boo this guy out of the building. And funny story is that I was there with my cousin, who is arguably the biggest HBK fan in the history of wrestling, and he was like the only guy standing there with an HBK sign the whole time while 18,000 other people were booing this guy out of the building. And I guess he was 12 or 13 years old at this time. My cousin is just standing there with an HBK sign trying to like go against the grain. It was just funny. That's just a personal side note. But look, back on track here, Shawn Michaels is just doing everything right here to get the crowd to despise him. And I guess the hope from WWE is that some of this is going to feed off of, some of the people at home are going to feed off of this heat that Shawn Michaels is getting. But slowly but surely, he turns it into Bret Hart. And obviously, the hate for Shawn Michaels from Montrealers stems from Bret Hart. So as it started with Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels slowly starts to make his way into trashing Bret the Hitman Hart.
Into this ring.
man. What a wave of emotions when he pulled that, because he was trashing Bret the Hitman Hart. We had never heard him say, "I screwed Bret," and take full ownership for it, even though in reality he didn't. But I remember when that music hit, it was the loudest pop I had ever been in. And to be fair, I haven't been in a bunch of WWE crowds, but I thought the Bell Center's roof was going to blow right off the structure of the building when that music hit. And we hadn't seen Bret Hart in 8 years on WWE programming. And lo and behold, it was a joke played on us by Shawn Michaels to cement himself as a heel. And then he went on to keep trashing the crowd and Bret Hart and Hulk Hogan. He did all that dance. And later on in that night, in a dark match, he tagged with JBL and Kurt Angle against Hogan, Batista, and John Cena to really cement himself as a top heel in the company. You know, tagging with Angle and JBL, the two most over heels in the company at that time, you could argue. And going against John Cena, Batista, Hogan. So that in the go-home show to Monday Night Raw, they really did a good job here to have Shawn Michaels go over as that big heel heading into SummerSlam. So SummerSlam comes and goes, and this is where I'll touch on a bit about how the creative differences allegedly were going on between the two. Because Hogan won this match, but allegedly they were supposed to have HBK win the match. And then at the last second, Hogan says, "I don't want to lose the match. I want to win." And then there was discussions that they were supposed to have a rematch at the Unforgiven pay-per-view. Lo and behold, Hogan says he doesn't want to, and he wants to have one match and just beat Shawn Michaels fair and square, and we go on our separate ways. And, you know, Shawn Michaels had also done, like, the Larry King thing, or Larry Fling, where he mocked Hogan and was pretending to be old, this and that. So we started kind of seeing the conflict behind the scenes between the two kind of seep out into the on-air programs, and the Larry Fling thing is a big example of that, that Shawn Michaels did. But it wasn't really until the match culminated that we saw how it really came to a head between the two competitors. And how this match ended is how we truly saw Shawn Michaels' feelings come out for how he felt on how this match was booked. And I just don't think he felt that respected, and for good reason. And as this match winded down, we got to see how Shawn Michaels' true feelings were towards Hogan.
Let's just go ahead. Let's just hear it. Go ahead.
Stop it there. Shawn Michaels had Hogan right where he wanted him. You know, he low blows him with the ref down, hits him with a chair, busts him open. Hogan's bleeding like a stuffed pig, does the elbow drop, the sweet chin music, and the Icon looks to have the legend beat here. And that I made a mistake before. Icon versus Icon was Rock versus Hogan at WrestleMania 18. This match was billed as Legend Hogan versus Icon HBK. So you think that HBK is about to have the match sealed, but in classic Hogan fashion, he out of nowhere gets a breath of fresh air.
It's over! It's over! He got it! That was not Hogan with a sweet chin music! Every county! Forget about it! Oh!
So like I said, he gets a second win and does the classic Hulk up and this and that. But unless you're watching it, you really don't see what happened. And Shawn Michaels with the biggest overselling probably in the history of wrestling. And, you know, as Hulk Hogan's hulking up, he's like acting like a kind of like a 10-year-old who's just gotten in trouble from his dad after his dad found out that he skipped class or something. And then when he got the big boot from Hogan, like he went down, popped back up, walked around in a circle and did like a half somersault. And then the cherry on the cake is when Hogan hits the leg drop and goes for the pin. Shawn Michaels puts his leg completely vertical up for the pin as Hulk Hogan counts the 1, 2, 3, gets the victory. And you kind of see Hogan say something to HBK, maybe thanking him for doing the job for him, even though it wasn't his preference. Maybe he gave him shit, like make him look like a fool. So look, in retrospect, I mean, it was kind of, I think, unfair for Shawn Michaels. Like, I don't think that him losing bothered him so much as it was to the build slash not getting a rematch and whatnot. You know, Rock and Hogan had a rematch. Why not Hogan and HBK? But one way or another, they had one match. Hogan got the victory. He got everything he wanted. It was heel versus face instead of babyface versus babyface. And I guess, you know, Shawn Michaels did what he felt was fair in a way. And if he was going to do the job and do everything Hogan wanted, he was going to get the last laugh, at least in some capacity. And what I take from this program more than anything else is just how good a heel HBK could be and was when he felt like it. And obviously it was harder for him when he came back in 2002 and, you know, was a born again Christian. But this, the way he built himself to a top level heel in less than a month was just something. And of course, having the Monday Night Raw in Montreal as the go home show to SummerSlam was just fell in the lap of him and Vince McMahon and WWE creative as a whole for him to completely get over as that big time heel. It still was quite impressive what HBK did. And then even more so that he went right back to being a babyface following this. And he was a babyface pretty much right until he retired in 2010, I think it was, when he fully hung them up. So look, credit to Shawn Michaels. He proved to me that he was one of the best, and he has one of the best wrestling psychologies in the history of the company. And this was one of the main programs as the Ruthless Aggression era was winding down. And I believe this was Hulk Hogan's last notable program. I think 2 years later, he had the short program and a match with Randy Orton at SummerSlam, but pales in comparison to this. So it, also, this was probably another reason why this rivalry is notable, because this was Hogan's last big notable program and in-ring match, and it featured Shawn Michaels. So look, guys, that's all I got for you today. I hope you enjoyed Hogan versus HBK. You can follow me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. You can follow Matt at wrestling_audio. You can email him at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. I hope you guys stay safe, and I will talk to you next week.